taking love to you in my own heart, and thanking God for hundreds of you, and singling out some people who said, I can. I can. I was looking at little Phyllis Pinton down here. God bless her. 2 feet 10 inches tall, 30-some-odd years of age. Just been a little bitty thing all of her life. She's had serious surgery several times in recent days. But little Phyllis says, I can. Went to Tennessee Temple College. Pardon expression. And Tennessee Temple College. Got herself a degree in college. Rode a tricycle up and down the hallways. Rode a golf cart up and down the street between buildings. But she said, I can. I can. I was thinking about Richard Miller. I think we get too used to him around here. Seeing him sitting back there with his in his wheelchair with no arms and no legs. Born that way. Never had a finger, never had a toe, never had a foot, never had a hand, never had an arm, never had a leg, just 4 stubs. And yet he went to University of Texas and got a law degree. Now he travels around the world preaching the gospel of Christ. Why? Because he said, I can. I can. I can. I can. I was looking at Mrs. Erickson back there. I mention her often. I'll keep on mentioning her because I'm going to preach that lady back to normalcy somewhere or another. She don't need my help much, but I'm going to keep on. Ms. Erickson, who had tumor of the brain, and because of it, surgery, she lost most of her vision and her ability to speak plainly and her equilibrium and can't walk, and been crawling around her house like an animal to get from one room to the other. Boy, with all the spunk a gal can have, she says, I can. I can. And now, with the help of leaning against the wall or so, she's able to walk a little bit now. Why? Because she said, I can. I was looking at my mother down here. God bless her. She got more spunk than most anybody I know. 88 years of age, and yet she says, I can. I can. All through these years, she said, I can. I can. I recall, it's been about 4 years ago now. My mother was sick. It's coming to Christmas time, and she was sick, and she said, oh, son, I just think my time about gone. I'm about, about ready to go to heaven and so forth, if that's where she's going to go. And she said, I just don't think I'll ever be able to get up again. I said, yes, you can. Yes, you can. No, son, no, no, no. And it was Christmas time, and I said, why don't you go back to Texas and visit the folks in Texas? That'd cheer anybody up. And she said, no, son, I can never go back to Texas again. And so on Christmas Eve, I went over to the Holiday Inn, and I bought enough gift certificates to pay for her and for her and my sister Erlene's stay for a week in a Holiday Inn down in Texas. And I went got 2 airplane tickets, a round trip to Texas and back. And the mother was sitting there, and she's all given up. And, oh, son, I just don't feel good. I said, you're going to go to Texas, Mama. She opened it. What'll I do with these tickets? What'll I do with these rooms? I said, you're going to use the tickets to fly to Texas and back. That's what you're going to do. Oh, but son, if I flew to Texas, I'd die. Okay, I'll come down and bury you down there. That's a good place to get buried anyhow. But you're going to go. And she said, well, son, I'm not well. I said, go sick then. And so the next day she got on the airplane. And she's taken 7 trips to Texas since then. And why? Boy, I like the guy that says, I can. I can. Paul said, I can. Back yonder, little Sharon Stromberg. I know she doesn't know this. Maybe she may remember it a bit. I don't know. But Sharon Stromberg in a serious car accident that killed one of our teenagers and seriously injured a couple of others. And she was unconscious in a coma for weeks and weeks. And I'd go to the hospital and her head was shaved and her face was covered with dried blood. And they didn't even, she had many broken bones. They couldn't even for a while even put the bones together and try to healed the bones because little Sharon was in a coma and nobody thought much she'd live. And I went to the hospital, and I don't know whether she remembers even hearing it or not because she's in a coma, but I'd lean down over Sharon and I'd say, Sharon, you can, Sharon, you can. And I'd talk to her a while and I'd say, Sharon, I love you and I want you to know you can live. You can, you can, you can, you can, you can, you can. This morning I'd like to talk to somebody who's about to give up and talk you into saying, I can. And somebody that's about quit to stay in the battle and say, I can. Our theme this week at pastor school has been, don't quit. Don't quit. We had, hats, passed out big hats. What do you call these flat hats? I always forget. Skimmers, passed out skimmers, one to every man. On the band it said, don't quit. And One day we had a bunch of our college students that put on wigs. Our boys did put on wigs and made hippies and got communist armbands and passed out little circulars asking the pastors to quit as they came in. And all week it's been, don't quit, don't quit. And this morning, every pastor has a letter waiting for him. I had one yesterday when he got home. And you folks are still here. You got waiting for him. When you get home, it says, dear, and called his name, I think it said, don't quit, signed Dr. Jack Howells, First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana. Anybody can turn back. Anybody can say, I can't. Anybody can say, I just can't do it. Anybody can say, I'm not qualified. I like what Browning said. He said, grow old with me, the best is yet to come. Yes, doesn't matter how old you are, you can. Doesn't matter how weak you are, you can. Doesn't matter how many problems you have, you can. Doesn't matter how many heartaches you have, you can. Doesn't matter how young you are, you can. Doesn't matter how poor you are, you can. Doesn't matter how uneducated you are, you can. I want you to leave here this morning saying, with the grace of God, I can and I will. Dr. Daniel Poling, not one of my favorite preachers, but a preacher, used to get up every morning and he'd go to the mirror, look in the mirror, and he'd say three times, I believe, I believe, I believe. And that's what I want you to do this morning. I can. You know the word can in the Greek, it also in some places is the word dunamis, which means dynamite. I can, which means the word can and dynamite are the same thing. Can is dynamite. Can't is powerless. Can is powerful. Can't is failure. Can is success. Can't is doom. Failure is joy. A success. A can is joy. You can. I can. I can. I can. How many times I've said that through these years in my ministry as facing the wall. I can. I can. I can. Yes, you can. If Mrs. Erickson can, you can. And if Phyllis Fenton can, you can. And Richard Miller can, you can. And if Sharon Stromberg can, you can. Oh, but you say, no, don't say that to me. Hush, you can. Yes, you can. Now just do it. You can. You can. You can. These I canners. Thank God for these I canners. There are three things about the I canner. In the first place, the I canner has a goal. The I canner has a goal. The I canner has something he wants to do. Browning said, man's reach should exceed his grasp or what's heaven for. Man's reach should exceed his grasp or what's heaven for. Somebody said, when you catch up with your goals, you're in trouble. James Russell Lowell said, no failure, but low aim is what the crime is. No, not failure, but low aim is what the crime is. Look at a general, look at a ruler, a tyrant, dictator, weeping. A young man, 29 years of age, weeping, has drunk himself to death almost now, and will die a premature death. Why? Because Alexander the Great looks out and says, I have no more worlds to conquer. As long as you've got some worlds to conquer, you can. As long as you have a goal, you can. As long as you have a dream, as I said Thursday night, you can. As long as you have hope for the future, you can. I'm 49 years of age. I look like I'm 25. Thank God for that. But I'm 49 years of age. I'll be 50 September the 25th. Write that down. Don't forget it. September 25th. I'll be 50. I've never thought the future looked any brighter than I do today. I've never had more goals than I have today. I've never had more dreams than I've had today. I have today. Somebody, little house, what are your dreams? I don't want to tell you yet because you've got to finance them. I don't want you to know it yet. But I never have in all my life. The sun has never been brighter. The future has never been happier. The prospects have never looked better. The goals have never been bigger. The dreams have never been more vivid than today. Why? Because I want to stay young all the time. That's why. Have a goal. Have a goal. The I canners have a goal. It was Viktor Frankl who said, professor of psychology at the University of Vienna, he said, the greatest drive to life is meaning. The greatest drive to life is meaning. Again, he said, goals give meaning to living. Somebody said, never arrive. These I canners, they always have goals. And by the way, Dr. Morris, that keeps you young, doesn't it? You're going to do something tomorrow, that keeps you young. Looking forward to tomorrow, that's what youth is. I know some folks that are old at 25 and some that are young at 80. I can see old Dr. Ford Porter up in his 80s now, taking me on a tour the last time I was down in Indianapolis of the big, showing me a great big plot of ground. Now he said, Dr. Hiles, the church, we're going to move our church, and the church is going to be here. And we're going to put our grade school over here.
and our high school over here, and our college over here, and our printing building over here. He said, we have a $10 million project. He could hardly walk, stumbling out there in his 80s, but he had goals. He's going somewhere. The old man is still young. I can see old Dr. John Rice still planning for the future. 80 years of age, but still planning for the future and still going somewhere. And the honest, simple truth is the I-canners have goals. You say, preacher, I just don't know if I can do it or not, then you won't do it. But if you will say, I can, you will do it. I will, you will do it. Those that have goals, the I-canners, they have goals. Where are you going today? What are you going to do tomorrow? Huh? What is your goal? What is your dream? What is your hope? Long as you have something tomorrow to which you can look forward to, you'll be an I-canner. One time, there was a fellow named Charlie Paddock. Does the word Charlie Paddock mean anything to you? Charlie Paddock, in the 1920s, I think it was the Olympic champion. He held for a while the 100-yard dash record, for the world record for the 100-yard dash. One day he was speaking in a high school auditorium in Cleveland, Ohio, and he said after he won his Olympic championship, broke the world record, he said to a bunch of high school students, he said, you can. You can do what you ought to do. You can do what you think God wants you to do. You can do it. You can do it. And after he finished speaking, a little spindly leg, skinny leg, frail black boy came up to this Olympic champion. And this little black boy looked up and he said, I'd like to be an Olympic champion like you someday, Mr. Paddock. And Mr. Paddock looked at him and said, you can be an Olympic champion like me. You can, you can, you can, you can, you can, you can. And the little fellow went out and started lifting weights and doing exercises. In 1936, that little fellow went to Germany, won 4 gold medals for the United States track team. His name was the great Jesse Owens, because one day a track champion looked at a super students and a little skinny-legged black fellow walked up and said, I'd like to. And Paddock said, you can, you can, you can. And he did. And you can, too, if you will. Then Jesse Owens came back. He came back from Germany. And they were having a parade in Cleveland, Ohio, for Jesse Owens. And a little skinny black boy ran up to him and said, Mr. Owens, I'd like to be an Olympic champion. This little skinny black boy had such skinny legs, they called him Bones. And the little fellow nicknamed Bones, the skinniest guy in the class, said, Mr. Owens, I'd like to be an Olympic star. And Jesse Owens did not forget what he had been told several years before by Charlie Paddock. And Jesse Owens repeated the same words to the little fellow named Bones. He said, you can be if you will be. You can be if you want to be. You can be if you ought to be. And that little fellow named Bones in 1948 lined up at the Olympic Games in Wembley Stadium in London, England, with 5 other men about to run the 100-yard dash. And the trigger was pulled and the gun went off and Bones Dillard won first place in the Olympic game. Why? Because Charlie Paddock said to Jesse Owens, you can. And because Jesse Owens said to Bones Dillard, you can. And I say this morning, you can too. Young people, you can do it. You can. You can. You can. I recall many, many times through these years, somebody has said to me, Brother Hiles, you can do it. You can do it. Jack Belby, one of our good men. Years ago, we were fighting the battle here at First Baptist Church, trying to get up to 800 in Sunday school. One Sunday we have 710, next Sunday 707, next Sunday 750, the next Sunday 775. We couldn't get to 800. And one day Jack Belby walked up to me and held up a figure, 3,000. He said, that's what they're running at Highland Park Baptist Church in Chattanooga, Tennessee. He said, we can too. I said, Jack, you know better than that. We're having trouble. And Jack said, you can. You can! You can! And that day was one of the most important days of my life here at the First Baptist Church. Why? One of our men came up who said, you can! You can! And that same fellow now who's had sugar diabetes and been to the hospital and has almost had to have his feet amputated, who hobbles around here on sometimes ready-made shoes and big house shoes, and he stays busy for God and stays doing something for God. Oh, I'd like to reach out this morning and grab some of you young folks and say, you can! You can! You can! I'd like to grab some of you people who are up in years and say, yes, you can. Yes, you can. The I canners have a goal. There's something else about the I canners. The I canners make a start. The I canners make a start. Oh, fearful, J.C. Penney one time said, the hardest part of any job is getting started. Richard Nutra said one time, I've never done anything in my life that did not seem to be impossible when I was at the beginning stage. Seemed like it'd be impossible for us to have a high school. It seemed like it'd be impossible for us to have a grade school. It seemed like it'd be impossible for us to have a college. It seemed like it'd be impossible for us to have a great auditorium like this. But somebody said, I can! I can! The other day someone said to me, Pastor, when are we going to quit getting out of the crisis stage all the time? When is it? When are we going to get out of the crisis? I don't have a plan to get out of the crisis stage. God's people never get out of the crisis stage. We're always in a battle. We're always doing something big for God. We're always having to raise some more money. We're always having to improvise. Why? Because we can. That's why. We can. We can. You show me a church that says I can, I'll show you a church that will. You show me a man that says I can, I'll show you a man that will. You show me a committee that says I can, I'll show you a committee that will. You show me a school that says I can, I'll show you a school that will. And I want to keep pounding one thing in your mind and in your breast through these years at First Baptist Church of Hammond. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. I said one day to a young man in our church, a little intermediate junior high boy, I said, Terry, you can. But he said, I'm not very big. I said, Terry, you can. And Terry Smith is now pastor of one of the largest churches in the state of Texas. I've said again and again to our young people, you can. You can. You can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth you. Theodore Roosevelt said, far better it is to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered by failure, than to take rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy much nor suffer much, because they live in the gray twilight that knows no victory or defeat. That's what's wrong with America right now. That's why we lost the Vietnam War. That's why we've lost the Angola War. That's why we lost the Korean War. We've reared a generation of I-canters. A bunch of loafing people that sit back and get their government checks every month and won't work. And if anybody on their job does work, then they make fun of them. Our boys at Hiles Anderson College go out and put a good day's work or a good night's work in and get ostracized by a bunch of loafing communist hippies who won't work on the job because they're shown up by our boys. You let me see a boy from Hiles Anderson College that gets his paycheck and doesn't put in a good day's work, and I'll show you a boy that'll be on his way home as soon as I find out about it. I can. I can. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. I recall when I wrote my first book, I've written 24 books now, and the sales have gone nearly to 5 million. And I wrote my first book. I still don't know if I'm a writer. Have no idea. But as long as you'll buy them, I'll write them. I'll guarantee you that. But I still don't know I'm a writer. I wrote my first book, typed the manuscript up, then read it, didn't like it. Threw it in the garbage can. I mean, threw it in the garbage can. Wadded it all up. I mean, wadded it like that and threw it in the garbage can and said, I can't write a book. But I got to thinking, good night, I can't do anything. The publisher can't do anything but turn me down. I got that, you won't believe this, but I got that wadded up paper out of the garbage can and got an iron and an ironing board and ironed that manuscript so it'd get back in shape and sent that, as a hot manuscript, I didn't for sure, I sent that iron manuscript into the publisher, and the publisher flew all the way from Grand Rapids, Michigan to Dallas, Texas and had a meeting with me in the Baker Hotel and took me out to eat. Why? Because I started. I started. It wasn't easy, and I didn't know if I was a writer. But I'm simply saying, you can if you'll dream, and you can if you'll start. This third thing about an I-canner is this. The I-canner has a goal. The I-canner makes a start. But the I-canner also gives his all. He gives what he has. Everything. Listen, if I know anything about success, it's this, and that's give it all you got. All you got. What you've got may not be enough to match what somebody else has, but give it all you've got. God's not concerned about how much you give. God's concerned about how much of it you give. I'd rather have one talent and give it all than have 10 and give 9. I'd rather have a little bit and give all of it than have a lot and give half of it. Give it all. There's one scripture that's motivated me through these years. It's Ecclesiastes 9:10. Or is it 10:9? I've forgotten all of a sudden. 9:10. Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. Or better still, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do it with all thy might. I've said it 10,000 times. If you're a choir director, do it with all your might. If you're a custodian, do it with all your might. If you're a Sunday school teacher, do it with all your might. If you're a student in high school, do it with all your might. If you're a preacher, do it with all your might. If you're going to build a church, do it with all your might. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, be it being a carpenter, if your hand grips a hammer or grips a saw, or if your hand grips a trowel, or if your hand grips a saucepan, or if your hand grips a Bible, or if your hand grips a shovel, or if your hand grips a sewing needle, or if your hand grips an ice pick, or if your hand grips a knife, whatever your hand has, use it. Give it all you've got. Never turn back. Never give up. Never settle for anything less than giving everything you've got. And I'll guarantee you one thing. God can do more with a give it aller that has a little to give than a give it halfer that has an awful lot to give. People oftentimes say, oh, I think God can use her. She sure is beautiful. Oh, phooey. God doesn't need any pretty gals. God painted the rainbow with his heavenly brush. God it was that caused the lakes in Minnesota to drop like teardrops on the ground. And God lifted the great mountains of Colorado like pyramids overlooking the city of Denver and Colorado Springs. And God painted the beach of Florida. And God made the deserts and the Grand Canyon of Arizona. And it was God that made the forest of Washington. And God has made the beauty of the heavens. And God made the sunrise. And God made the sunset, and God made the stars at night to look like heavenly chandeliers so man could enjoy his evenings out. God does not need any beauty. God just needs everything you have. That's all God needs. Oh, you say, boy, that young man, look at those shoulders. Look at those muscles. Look at that good physique. Look at that countenance. Look at that big bushy head of hair. Sounds like I'm describing myself up here. I don't mean to do it. But, boy, God can use him. No, I'm sorry. God doesn't need any strength. God holds the world in place. And God caused the sun to rise in the morning like a bride coming out of her chamber. And God doesn't need any strength. God just needs you. God can do more with a little bit of runt that's wholly given to him than he can to a great giant that's not wholly given to him. I'm saying the I Canner gives his all. Out in northwest Iowa, there's a fellow named Walter Grieving. Walter Grieving, as a young man, got polio and he was paralyzed. In fact, everything was paralyzed. His body, his legs, his feet. He only had one place on his entire body that wasn't paralyzed, and that was the index finger of his right hand. And Walter Grieving said, I won't give up. I only have one finger that I can move, but I can use that finger. Boy, that's the kind of guy I like. Walter Grieving said, I can use that finger. What can you use it for? And Walter Grieving said, well, what can you do with a finger? You can push a button. That's what you can do. Now, what kind of button will a button do? A button turns on a tape recorder. A button turns off a tape recorder. A button can turn on a radio or turn off a radio. Or a button can fit pages in a book. Or a button can turn on a hi-fi or a record player. And Walter Grieving took that one little finger and made a success out of his life. Somewhere, sometime, I heard a story I'll not ever forget. Over in Africa, in Japan, a colony in Japan, there was a young Japanese fella who was in a leper colony. And as you know, what leprosy does to your skin and how it takes away your sensitivity. But this young man lost his sight. And he could not read, and he was a leper. He wanted to read, and so he tried to learn Braille. As you know, Braille is a language that where you read by feeling with your fingers the raised symbols. And he tried to learn, but the leprosy had eaten up his fingers, tip of his fingers, and he couldn't read. He took off his shoes. He said, I'll learn to read by Braille. He took off his shoes and put the Braille books under his feet. And with his toe, he tried to read Braille, but his toe had lost its sensitivity. But that young man in a leper colony in Japan, with no eyes with which to see and no fingers with which to feel and no toes sensitive enough to learn to read Braille, he said, I'll read Braille. I'll learn to read Braille. And learn to read Braille he did. How? He read Braille with his tongue. With his tongue. I'm sick of college students coming to me and a big old fellow, 6 foot tall, weighs 175 pounds, coming to my office and say, I can't stay in school. Oh, God pity that kind of heathen, loafing, wicked, paganism. You can stay in school. I'm sick and tired. The people say, well, that is, oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Dennis Benton can, you can. Mrs. Erickson can, you can. Sharon Stromberg can, you can. Richard Miller with no arms and legs can, you can. I love to tell this story. Up in New York City, in the middle of the city, a little girl whose name was Kathy got some kind of a terrible disease. She was rushed to the hospital. And little Kathy was about to die. The doctor came. The doctor examined little Kathy way up on the top floor of one of the big hospitals in New York City. The doctor came to examine little Kathy. Mother and father sat over in the corner of the hospital room, private room, anxiously waiting to hear what the doctor would say. The doctor examined little Kathy's body and turned with tears streaming down his cheeks. The doctor said, Kathy's going to die in a minute. Kathy cannot make it. It was about 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. The parents embraced each other, tears streaming down their cheeks onto the floor. Their only little girl, Kathy, just about to go on into eternity. Oh, the dreams they had for her. Oh, the hopes they had for her. Oh, the memories they had of her coming. And now little Kathy's about to be taken away. And there she lies. The doctor said, She said, it'll take until midnight for the crisis to come. Now, if Kathy could have lived till midnight, she might could have pulled through. You recall the old days, they used to call to mention the crisis an awful lot, reach the crisis. That's when the healing powers of the body have rushed to the infected parts to give it to where then you turn the corner all of a sudden and the crisis comes. And he said, if Kathy could have lived till midnight, she might have could have made it. But there's no way. Kathy can't live another hour. That was about 7 or 8 o'clock at night. Kathy was 7 years of age. Back in Kathy's neighborhood was a little boy. A little boy that she'd played with, a little playmate. He too was 7. And little John or George, I forget his name. I think it was John. Anyway, little John came. He heard about Kathy being sick. He said, Mama, I'd like to go see Kathy. But of course, little 7-year-old boy can't go down, go to the hospital room. See, she told him he couldn't. Little boy on a summer day slipped off with his bare feet and ran down the street, slipped off from home, ran down the street till he got to the hospital where Kathy was. He went inside. He looked to the left. He looked to the right. For no one was coming. He took off and passed the desk and got down low and skid past the desk and got to the elevator. He looked to the left. He looked to the right. He jumped on the elevator quickly when no one was on. He pushed the button in a hurry. He went up to Kathy's floor where Kathy was. He got off at the floor. Before he got out of the elevator, he looked to the left. He looked to the right to be sure nobody was coming. Little Johnny skidded down the next to the hallway and went down to Kathy's room. He walked inside Kathy's room, grieving mother and father over here on this side, brokenhearted, just about to grieve themselves to death, and Kathy breathing her last breath heavily, lying on the bed, and the doctor standing beside her with tears streaming down his eyes. Little Johnny walked up to Kathy, put his mouth right in her ear, and little Johnny said, breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe.
Kathy, don't you remember? Don't you remember, Kathy, how last summer we went down and got some worms, dug for worms, and don't you recall, Kathy, how we got us a pole and some hooks and went down to the creek, and we went fishing together. And don't you recall, Kathy, how much fun we had fishing last summer? Kathy, we'll do that again this summer. But, Kathy, we can't do it if you don't keep breathing. Kathy, breathe, Kathy. Breathe, breathe, Kathy. Breathe, breathe, Kathy. Breathe, breathe, Kathy. Breathe. Kathy, don't you remember last summer how we went out in the woods and we found some wild flowers? Remember, Kathy, how we picked Mother a bouquet and picked your mother a bouquet? Kathy, we'll do that again this summer. But Kathy, we can't do it if you don't keep breathing. Breathe, Kathy. You've got to breathe, Kathy. You've got to breathe, Kathy. Breathe. Breathe, Kathy. Breathe. Breathe, Kathy. Breathe. Kathy, don't you remember how that last summer, don't you recall, we went down to the beach, remember? And we got the sand, and I'd cover you up all but your head, and then you'd cover me up all but my head. We'd make castles there, sand castles there on the beach. Kathy, we'll do that again. Kathy, we're going to have more fun this summer than we had last summer. But, Kathy, we can't do that if you don't keep breathing. Kathy, you've got to breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Breathe, Kathy, breathe. Suddenly, Johnny felt two big hands on his shoulders. He turned around, looked up, and there was a doctor with tears streaming down his cheeks onto Johnny's brow. The doctor looked down to Johnny and said, Johnny, it's midnight and past, and Kathy's going to live. Johnny, for 5 hours, you've literally breathed life into Kathy, and she's going to make it. And grateful mother and father came over and hugged little Johnny. And today Kathy does live. And Kathy and Johnny did play again on the beach. And Kathy and Johnny did go fishing again. And Kathy and Johnny did pick flowers for their mothers again. Why? Because one little boy kept on saying, breathe, Kathy. Breathe! Breathe, Kathy! Breathe! Breathe, Kathy! Breathe! I stand here this morning to say to you, you can do it if you won't quit. You can do it if you won't turn back. I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. Yes, you can. Yes, you can, teenager. You can. But you say, brother, a young man sat in the office last night. He said, God's called me to preach, but I don't see how I can. I'm not what I ought to be. I feel like God called me, but somehow I have doubts about it sometimes. And I said, what do you want to be? I said, 10 years from now, what do you want to be? He said, 10 years from now, I want to be pastoring a church somewhere. And I said, you can! You can! You can! You give me a bunch of I canners. Don't you think those 12 spies that came back, 10 spies that came back from the promised land were awfully disappointed when they found out it could have been done? They said it couldn't be done. It can. It can. Phyllis, it can. Mrs. Erickson, it can be done. It can be done. It can. Sharon, it can. It can. You can. As I whispered in your ears while you didn't even know I was there, when your head was shaved, you're as bald-headed as me. Your head was shaved, and your little face was marked with blood and dried blood on your face. When your breathing was... And we thought you might not breathe the next breath. And I leaned into your ear and I said, you can, Sharon. You can. You can. You can, Mrs. Scales. You can have a happy life. And you can do something for God though your husband's been taken. You can. And so can you. 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 And so can you, and so can you, and so can you, if you'll say with the Apostle Paul, who wrote from jail, from the bondage and the seepage of the Mamertine prison, his feet no doubt in stocks and his body in stocks, in a seeping, damp, miserable, wretched jail, with the sounding and the trampling of the feet of the executioner coming almost immediately. Apostle Paul picks up his pen begins to write in a big hand because he had bad eyes. And he said, in that dark hour, I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me.